To achieve 4 years ago, it was pretty simple. It's to publish what the world wants to know and share. So we're a lifestyle publisher, an internet media company. We create content, we distribute it, and we monetize it. And one of the ways, one of the things that's been unique about our business is the fact that we use data very intensively throughout that entire process. So we have a very data-driven, crowdsourced production model, which gives us the flexibility to create a lot of high-quality content and do it at scale. So we publish content to our own and operated sites, which are brands like eHow.com or LiveStrong.com in food and fitness, Cracked.com, the comedy workbook. We recently launched a new initiative called Type F with Tyra Banks in the fashion and beauty category. So we publish to our own and operated sites, and we also publish to third-party sites, partners like USA Today.
So how do you use data to drive this process?
Well, we access a lot of information. Some of it's proprietary, some of it's available via various sources. But we're determining what consumers want to consume. And because of the nature of the publishing model that we've got about 15,000 professional freelancers who are qualified, they're vetted before they get into the system. We direct them in terms of what they write. And so we're able to actually scale that model.
So to determine what people want to consume, are you doing that on a real-time basis?
For the most part, yes.
Yeah. And so what are the signals? How do you know what people want at any one time?
Well, that's the beauty of the internet today. I mean, I think there are a number of sources of data signals. I mean, historically, probably the most significant was the search. And the great thing about the search signals is when you process that data, you really understand consumer intent. You really know what consumers are searching for. And now you've got companies like Twitter and Facebook who are emitting social signals. And so you can understand now, maybe not necessarily what their intent is at any given time, but what they're likely to consume based on a number of different patterns. So understanding how to process that information and building a model around that so we can produce content.
So you have algorithms that analyze behavior on Facebook and try to anticipate how that translates into what people actually want to consume.
Well, we are developing a number of different ways to process that data to produce a better experience for the consumer. I mean, with Facebook, it's maybe a little bit more about personalization.
So at the end of the day, what pops out here is you identify a demand. How do you also identify what you could make from that? So how do you decide whether or not it's worth even going out to commission a piece of content?
We do. We have a number of different ways, separate algorithms that determine what any given piece of content is worth. And it's generally looking at what we think the traffic patterns are and what we think the advertising dollars could be for any particular piece of content. And that sets the threshold for us in terms of looking at what the profitability or ROI should be on any given piece of content. And what's great about that is it lets us produce very niche, very specific content, which may serve a very small audience, but if we can do that profitably at scale, millions of times a year, that's what's created.
So you have a return on investment on every piece of content. So you know, or you try and analyze in advance how much you're going to make in the lifetime on that particular item.
We do a lot of work to determine the probable economic benefit of every piece of content.
That's great. And so, well, that goes down to every video on YouTube, every article.
Exactly. We do it at the unit level.
And these are pretty small values, presumably. So a couple of dollars, $5. I mean, what is the value of a how-to video on YouTube?
It depends. I mean, it depends on the category. It depends on the format. We produce content with whether it's with a partner, with our own site, or with a different brand. So it really does.
And then, you have a freelance pool of people who produce this content for you.
That's right.
Do you have an editorial staff at all?
We do. We have a 50 to 60 person in-house editorial team. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that they do is really guide the voice and style guide of any particular site. Because, I mean, there really still is an art to the media business, right? There's a fair amount of science in our business model and process, but the art of determining how consumers are going to want to consume this information, what's the voice, what are the style guidelines. Content needs to be consistent so that the consumer gets a very consistent experience as they click within the site. So they might land on a piece of content because they've done a search for it, or they might land on a piece of content because their friend has shared something with them. And so once they get there, that's our consumer, and we've got to be able to deliver them a very very unique, holistic experience.
So there's a lot of science in this.
Yes.
Do you think of yourselves as a technology company or are you a media company?
I love that question because I think
you've heard it before.
Well, it's funny because I think most people feel like they need to answer I'm either or, and I think the reality of it is the successful media companies of the future have to be both. Have to be both. I mean, if you look at Amazon, we look at Netflix, and the way those companies, is Amazon a retailer or is it a technology?
So you've got 50 people, 60 in editorial. How many have you got in your system, the algorithm side of the business?
Well, we've got about 650 full-time employees, and on the engineering and product development team, it's probably, I think it's north of 120, 150.
So that's your main center of development?
Yes. Yes.
So you're a technology company?
I think it was.
Can any media company do what you're doing, or do you need to be designed for the web? I mean, your company was conceived or designed for a particular environment, which is the Google environment.
Yes.
Is that the way to do it?
Well, I think it's hard to adapt models to a new distribution platform. It's very difficult. It's not to say that it can't be done, but it's not easy to do. We raised about $350 million in private equity before going public. Raise another $85 or $86 million as part of the offering. So it is a capital-intensive business. I mean, there's a lot of work that has to be done to be able to grow both sides of the business. Because it's very important on the internet, I think, to be able to control content creation and distribution. Because the way you're tracking success to being able to measure how things work, you have to be able to control both. So owning distribution and then managing the creation process is important. And that's some things that some traditional media companies do really well. The Comcast model is probably a good example, even with NBC. So now you've got distribution and content working together. And for us, that's really the recipe for success.
But you don't own or control distribution. You are very much a winner of searches finding you. People typing in your URLs and so on.
Well, when I define distribution, I mean the ultimate destination of the site. So yes, in some ways, we are dependent on the ecosystem. There are only a few ways to really get traffic on the internet. Mm-hmm. You get it through organic search, you can buy paid keywords, you can share it, or you can directly navigate to it. So as a successful media network, you've got to be able to develop all of those channels.
Now, people have coined a phrase for the kind of things that you do, and they're calling you content farms these days, which is becoming a bit of a pejorative term, a bit of a dirty word. How do you feel about that? I mean, you know, there's a view of thought that actually what you're doing is basing the value of content on the web because you're producing a very high volume at low cost.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Do you reflect on quality?
I think anytime you do anything that's different or innovative, it takes time for people to really get their heads around it and understand it. So I think that's a term that journalists have tried to use to try to understand how we can do what we do so well. So in terms of how we measure quality, it comes back to the consumer. I think our network, which by the way is over 100 million uniques now a month and continues to grow, 80 million people came back the second time to one of our websites. So we look at repeat
visitors. So of your unique visitors, you say 8 million of them.
The percentage of repeat traffic is very high, yes. I think the number is 80 million repeat visits last month alone.
What percentage of your unique visitors come back?
I think it's a relatively high number, 75-80%. It's obviously something that we are tracking pretty closely. But we also look at quality in terms of whether the information was useful. I think that's partially maybe where that whole debate comes from. Because some of the things that may be useful to you or me may not be useful to a journalist who's conveniently writing an article about the death of journalism and is looking for an example.
Fancy that, death of journalism. So are they coming back because they're coming back by Google, or are they, when they find your sites, are they thinking of the destinations and coming back to visit? Otherwise, how much of your traffic?
Well, it's a mix. I think we've reported that number. I don't have it to hand. It's a meaningful percentage. But we also look at how many times we are at the top of the listing versus sort of lower on the first page, and how many times people are clicking on our side for brands that way too. But as a company, we are developing, you have to be able to develop a diversity across all your distribution channels. And that only comes through providing a great consumer experience for brands that people trust.
Taking this out, I mean, not to sound like an old media guy, he's sort of questioning your role here, but well, it's in the blogosphere on the web this year, there's been a, the debate sort of flared up again, and it's not journalists like me that started with bloggers who are doing nothing to stop this, and they're saying, you know, actually your stuff is polluting Google, effectively. The value of search results is declining. Indeed, you see Google respond in the last couple of weeks by changing its algorithm.
Yep.
So, how should we interpret this? I mean, is there a problem?
Well, I think if you look at the absolute magnitude of the volumes, I think that's one interesting way to think about it. I think Facebook reports a number that they said 30 billion units of content were shared last month. And the number of search queries that happen in a global basis is orders of magnitude of that. So, when you think about the absolute amount of information that people are consuming, there's a real gap, and there's a real need for companies like Demand Media to be able to produce content at scale that people want to consume. I'm still a huge fan of Google. I've not changed my search engine. They continue to work for me a very relevant, useful search experience. I think their search query share continues to grow. So I don't really think that the data necessarily supports that claim that the search quality is lessening. They did, in fact, have a recent algorithm change. We blogged publicly about the net impact on our business wasn't material. And that happens when Google makes algorithm changes. I mean, some sites go up, some sites go down. That's the nature of the year.
Are you vulnerable to a change that would hurt your rankings?
I think there was just recent change. If Google said tomorrow we're blocking this particular domain from an index, that would have a material impact on our business. But Google's ambition is the same as ours, which is we need to provide consumers with a very consistent experience. Google wants to organize the world's information and do it in a way that gives consumers what they want. And our mission is to really publish that information. So it's very synergistic in a lot of ways.
By adding massively to volumes here, you're putting a lot of inventory out in the way of attracting a lot of advertising. Advertising rates have been falling. What impact do you think you're having on advertising rates, and what's the long-term sort of picture here for other content companies?
Well, I don't know if advertising rates necessarily falling, first of all. I would say we're seeing a lot of growth in our branded advertising sales, so direct branded sales campaigns. That's led by Joanne Bradford, who used to be, she's our chief revenue officer. She was there herself at Yahoo and Amazon prior to that. So what we're able to do is capitalize on that fragmentation to deliver a real intent-driven audience for the advertisers. And obviously they're willing to pay more for that because that's a very valuable user to them. On the whole, I think that what's happening on the data side of the business with DSPs and with ad exchanges, the trends that we see are very favorable to the publishers. I think you're starting to see these low-end remnant ad networks start to be moved out of the system because publishers are really starting to understand the value of their audience, the value of that data, and how they can capitalize on it and get higher rates for it.
So rates are going up.
Our CPMs have been consistently improving.
What about new things that you're trying? So what about mobile, for instance?
We are bullish about mobile. I mean, as a publisher, we own the rights to our content, so we just see mobile as another form of distribution in some ways for our content. In other ways, again, the mediums are different, so we need to have a team that can execute and develop great products. So we have the number one health application on the iPhone, which is Calorie Tracker for it's a Livestrong branded calorie app, and that's done pretty well. I think we're optimistic about what mobile can do for us in the future. But right now, the principal source of our business is not mobile. It's Facebook.
When you look out at mobile and the type of business model that you have, how's it going to work with
with the app stores and the mobile carriers and so on, what kind of share of the revenue are they going to want to be doing?
Absolutely. Yeah. Have you not negotiated these sort of relationships yet?
It's too early to come. Yeah, it's really too early to tell how it's going to unfold. I think what you're seeing now is the proliferation of the devices. And beyond that, the business models are still in flux. So it's unclear.
So when do you have that negotiation? You're the deal guy. You haven't made the deals.
We'll work.
All right, let's open up for a few questions. My friends should be around again.